try to pull a trick where they're born the last day of the month too. So March is a big month, but you know, birthdays are important, but as you get older, you stop kind of counting them. I remember as a kid, you had those milestones. You look forward to turning 14 and 15 and 16. But as you get older, your milestones are much more broad, and they're not necessarily tied to time. I remember there was a milestone, and you'll hit this if you haven't hit there yet. There's a year where it feels like all your friends are getting married. For us, that was like 2005, 2006. We went to weddings, just all kind of weddings. And I remember it was kind of fun going. You would go and you would experience what everyone had done, and you're planning your own wedding, and you're thinking about, hey, you know, maybe we should do this or do something different, or this is how we like it. I went to a lot of weddings. But I tell you, I never went to one that I wasn't prepared for. No, we do a lot of things in life very casually, but weddings are still one of those things that for the most part, well, if you think you're invited to a wedding, you're probably going to get dressed up, you're going to put a suit on, put a nice outfit on, and go there so you don't stand out. Jesus in Matthew 22 had a story for us about a wedding feast. And the story, as we'll read and study together, is interesting because, well, this great king has a great wedding. And of all the weddings that we would want to go to, it's probably going to be this one. Now, there were several weddings I went to where there's like five people. And you aren't getting many snacks. But I mean, if you're going to a king's wedding, this is going to be the one you want to go to. And he goes and he invites people, as we'll talk about and we'll read. But you know, he gets there and there's a guy, he says, who was not in his wedding clothes. He wasn't dressed up. And as you could imagine, the king's not real happy to him. Drawing a lot of negative attention. He's got something to say to him, and not just to him. There's a lesson here for all of us. And so I invite you to study this morning with us from Matthew chapter 22. We'll spend the bulk of our time here as we reflect on this parable that Jesus has about this great wedding feast. Now, I'll say at the outset, by way of introduction again, next week's supposed to be Visitor Sunday. I don't know what y'all did this week to invite everyone. But you're not supposed to be here if you're visiting until next week. And this lesson's for the members. Now, it'll be fine. But again, we're trying to hype that up next week. I do invite you to ask your friends and neighbors if they want to come hear the gospel. You never know what they're going to say. This past week, Bobby and I spent time with a couple good evangelists, people that spend a lot of time in personal study and teaching others. And they gave us all sorts of magic tricks to use on your friends and neighbors. And it really is just simply inviting them, will you come to church with me? And they said a lot of times people say no, but sometimes they say yes. And a lot of times the people that say yes, they may end up obeying the gospel. Look, don't sell your friends and neighbors short. You ask them to come learn about God and Jesus. We'll try to do that next week and focus on them and just invite you to remember that on your calendars this week. Well, as we study together, I do invite you to turn to the text this morning as we read together from Matthew 22. Jesus spoke to them again in parables, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who gave a wedding feast for his son. And he sent out his slaves to call those who had been invited to the wedding feast. And they were unwilling to come. Again, he sent out other slaves, saying, 'Tell those who have been invited, behold, I've prepared my dinner. My oxen and my fatted livestock are all butchered. Everything is ready. Come to the wedding feast.' But they paid no attention and went their way, one to his own farm, another to his business, and the rest seized his slaves and mistreated them and killed them." Now, we'll stop right there. There's a lot to digest here. I want to set the stage for you. Here at the end of Jesus' life, he's got a lot of very difficult things to say as his end is approaching, as Brad talked about, thinking about the last few hours of his life. The last week of his life, probably the most well-recorded, several chapters spent in his discussions and his arguments. And here Jesus has something to say about the kingdom of heaven. And again, we can't set the stage without you understanding that this lesson is meant to teach us about what it's like to be in God's kingdom and how we enter God's kingdom and what God expects of us in His kingdom. So as we're thinking about this morning, there isn't just application for us or randomly. This is very pointed to what God's kingdom is going to be like And of course, we know the church is part of God's kingdom. God's kingdom is broader and bigger than that, but the sense that it applies to us is, you're inside of God's kingdom, you're going to be saved. You're outside of God's kingdom, there's no salvation. And so we pay careful attention to the things God says when he starts talking about his kingdom. And so the kingdom of heaven is like this. It's like a man that invited a bunch of people to a wedding. Now, you know from our perspective that proper weddings require a lot of expense and preparation. I debated about what to put on this particular bullet because you might be saying, well, I got married in Vegas and it didn't cost me anything. Or, Stephen, you remember you married me in your living room and that required very little. But in general, when you think about weddings, you think about something that's going to require some time. I mean, very few people just say, hey, you want to get married today? We'll get married today. Usually you set a date and you send out things and you let people know, hey, it's going to be 3 o'clock in June and here's what we're going to do. We're going to start preparing now, and people take a year to prepare. They provide food and they talk to caterers and they pick out things. And those of you who've been roped into decorating for your friends' weddings, oh, yeah, I see a lot of sad faces. That's miserable. I mean, you're having to get flowers and cut them and buy things and set those things up, and it's usually hot and sweaty, and you're all just hoping everything goes all right. Could you imagine setting up a big event, and then everybody you sent an invitation to said, you know, we're just not going to come? Be pretty furious, wouldn't you? Now, it's even worse for people back in Jesus' day. People didn't have watches. They didn't have ways to tell time, and they had, relatively speaking, an estimate, but people didn't do things like we do, where at 10 o'clock you're going to do this, 10:30 we're going over here, 10:45 we're going here, oh, we got a wedding at 2. That's not how they did things. Things were very generally done, and so they would say, look, we're going to prepare this wedding, and this thing is probably going to last about a week. You're going to come to this great party, and the bridegroom's going to show up, and then everything's ready, and when the bridegroom gets here, then we're going to have the wedding. And we're just going to wait until he shows up? Yeah, we're going to wait until he shows up. And what they're going to do here, they're going to go to a lot of expense, killing, like he said, oxen and the fatted calf. I mean, for us, that's steak, you know. He's going to a lot of trouble. Now, think of it this way. If people didn't show up to your wedding today, you might say, that's fine. I'm just going to put the food in the fridge, and then I'll just eat it later. Well, they didn't do that back then. You know, you go to all this expense and trouble and you set out all this food for this big banquet. People don't come. You know what's going to happen to the food? Well, it's just going to go to waste. You know, there is a lot of expense and preparation that goes into that. And so God here, this king is inviting people to come to this wedding. And you should just imagine that if you could go to this amazing wedding, that everybody would be able to come. And so you knew it was happening. You knew you were expected to come, and they come out and they finally say, hey guys, it's ready. All right, we're ready for y'all to come. Everybody show up. And you would expect they would just show up. But these guys, it says in verse 5, well, there were two types of things. One of them, it said, that they paid no attention. They paid no attention and went on their way, one to his farm and another to his business. All right, so these people are what I would call apathetic. All right, they really didn't seem to be that interested in it. I mean, they weren't upset or they weren't mad. They weren't frustrated. They were just busy. Yeah, you're inviting us to come to your wedding? Well, that sounds great, but I can't. I'm too wrapped up in other things. And so from our perspective, we're thinking, well, is that? Well, I bet there are people like that. I'm sure you invited some people to your wedding and they just didn't show up. Well, that's okay. They weren't like this other half that we're going to talk about. There are people that are just more wrapped up and concerned with their own things than they are about whatever's happening with you. And that's how some of these guests were. They went to their farm, they went to their business, they went to just do whatever they felt like doing. They were pretty apathetic. But then, verse 6, and this is just the craziest thing, I hope it didn't happen to you. The rest seized his slaves and mistreated them and killed them. These people weren't apathetic at all. These people were very antagonistic. There were people that when they came and said, hey, you want to show up to our party, we're ready to invite you. Well, they attacked them and killed them. Now you might say, when would that ever happen? That would never happen at a real wedding. Well, there are a lot of people today that I'm going to tell you, they're on edge. And they're on edge about a lot of things, maybe politically, religiously. But a lot of people, when you want to talk to them about God, they're not going to give you just some apathetic reaction. But let's play a game with Visitor Sunday and let's say, you know, all right, I'm gonna go and I'm going to knock on a few doors. I'm going to ask some of my neighbors to come. A lot of people, they may say, oh, I appreciate the invite. I think we're going to be busy on Sunday, but that's great. They'll be the first group. But there may be some people, you walk on the door, knock on the door, and you say, hey, you want to come to our church? And they just start going into you about religion. They're not real happy. They had a bad experience. You want to talk about Jesus? I think all this is just made up and full lies, and I hate what you people are doing to the country, and I wish you'd all just go away. There's a lot of antagonism out there about learning about God. Now, it was the same way about Jesus. You know from studying your Bible that this is a story about God and Jesus himself. And now you would imagine if Jesus came and God said, look, I've been planning this thing for your entire human existence. Even before that, actually, I'd been preparing this great wedding with you and my son. And yet God sent Jesus down in the flesh and he came here and he lived among us. And instead of welcoming with open arms God's invitation to salvation, there were people that were very hostile to God. There were a number of reasons for that. But while we look at this and we think nobody's ever going to respond to an invitation like that, there are a lot of people throughout history that have attacked and killed the prophets of God. That's no different than the antagonism that's out there today. There are a lot of people that are very antagonistic toward Christianity and to the invitation we might send out. So when we read the story, it does seem a tad far-fetched, doesn't it? But then when you start to really think about it, well, I could see that. They're being very hostile to God. And notice God's response in verse 7. It says, but the king was enraged, and he sent his armies and destroyed those murderers and set their city on fire. Now, we'll take a minute to just think about that. Again, I hope none of you do that same kind of thing if people don't show up to your wedding. I was looking for you, and now you're going to pay. Well, we're not going to do that. But in general, you think about what God did to Israel. After working with them and teaching them and helping them and training them. And out of Egypt, God says, I called my son. God did everything to provide for Israel, his child. And then when the son came to invite them home, finally, oh, they turned on him and they killed him. And so in response to how God was dealt with by the people of Israel in AD 70, God sent the armies of Rome to destroy Jerusalem. And they besieged it, and they attacked it, and they wiped out a million plus people. And God foreshadowed this and prophesied it. You can read Matthew chapter 24, and you can read companion passages in Luke that talk about the idea of God's going to come, and Jesus is going to say, look, you need to flee to the hills when you see these things occurring. And he wasn't just talking about the end of the world. A part of that, he's talking about that, well, you can read in the first part of Matthew chapter 24 as he talks about it. Look, one stone's not going to be left upon another. And he's talking about Jerusalem. He says it's going to be trash. And the disciples say, Lord, when will these things be? Well, they want to know. And Jesus outlined it for them. I think the book of Revelation speaks to and talks about God's righteous judgment using other nations to come and attack Israel and destroy them. Again, we can talk about that at a later date. But this is God's response. God wasn't going to sit by while his son was so mistreated and let people go unjudged. Now, the whole concept of the invitation and the whole concept of God bringing Jesus at all was to save people because he loved them. But when they turned on God, well, God says, look, upon this generation is going to come all the righteous blood that's ever been spilled. From the blood of Abel to the blood of Zacharias, he says, all that blood is going to be reckoned of this generation. And you see that play out in AD 70 with the destruction of Jerusalem. I think that's what Jesus is foreshadowing here in Matthew 22 and verse 7, where the king's enraged and sent his armies and destroyed those murders and set their city on fire. What's the takeaway here at this first couple verses and first couple slides? Well, I think you need to take God's invitation very seriously. There are many people that God is expecting to come into his kingdom. They already knew, hey, I'm going to come invite you when everything's ready. Jesus shows up and God says, hey, now's the time, everything's ready. And how are you going to respond to God's invitation? Well, the Jews, who God originally had invited, well, we know how they responded. they didn't care, or they trashed him. But as we continue our thoughts, there's a second invitation after this first one goes south. Start reading with me in verse 8. He says to his slaves, "The wedding's ready, but those who were invited were not worthy. Go therefore to the main highways, and as many as you find there, invite to the wedding feast." Those slaves went out into the streets and gathered together all they found, both evil and good, and the wedding hall was filled with dinner guests. This is a second invitation that God did. And so you know how this plays out, right? God opened the invitation initially to the wedding, but as those people responded and they didn't respond to God's invitation, what did he do the second time? Well, he opened it up. He said, "All right, forget the people we were thinking about. Now, let's go get everybody. You slaves, go out and you get the rich, the poor, the old, the young. I want this place filled for my party." And you can imagine why. God's done so much to prepare that he says, "I want you to get everyone." The Jews had a real hard time with this. But this really is the mystery of the gospel. That God opened the doors of the kingdom, not just to Israel, not just to the children of Abraham, but to all who would come to him in faith. In Acts chapter 13, you can see some of the discussion about who the gospel is for. And at the end of it, the next Sabbath day, as Paul's talking, nearly the whole city assembled to hear the word of the Lord. But when the Jews saw the crowds, they were filled with jealousy and began contradicting the things spoken by Paul and were blaspheming. Paul and Barnabas spoke out boldly and said, "It was necessary that the word of God be spoken to you first, since you repudiate it and judge it yourselves unworthy of eternal life. Behold, we are turning to the Gentiles. For so the Lord has commanded us, 'I have placed you as a light for the Gentiles, that you may bring salvation to the end of the earth.'" Jesus, in his great commission, said, "I want you to preach the gospel in Judea and Samaria, and then to the uttermost parts of the earth." The gospel was given to the Jews. Salvation was of the Jews. And God intended for the Jews to hear that message of repentance first. And yet, because they, as you see here in Acts chapter 13, consider themselves unworthy of eternal life, well, God's inviting everybody to the party. Everybody can come. And as you could read, and we won't spend time looking at it, I'm sure you'll cover it in your Romans class, but this partial hardening of the Jews was intended. God was making them jealous through opening this invite up to everyone so that those who initially consider themselves unworthy may change their mind and be grafted back into God's family. But in general, that's the purpose of this second invitation. Look, everybody was invited. And so if God is opening up this invite to everybody, well, just imagine if you did the same thing. Imagine if you had a wedding, it turned out not a lot of people were going to come. Well, what are we going to do? Well, all right, how about this? You just go through Walmart, go down every aisle, and just ask people, "Hey, what are you doing Saturday at 3? Would you like to come to a wedding?" And just see what you get. Now, don't stop at Walmart. You got to go down to Big Lots. And you're going to have to go down to Phipps Plaza and invite some nice people, maybe get something nice. But then you're going to have to go under the bridges and things of Atlanta. Look, we got to really scour the place. I want everybody invited. And you can imagine what would happen. You're going to get some good people to attend, but you're going to get some bad ones too. Notice what it said in verse 10. Those slaves went out into the streets and gathered together all they found, both evil and good. And the wedding hall was filled with dinner guests. What does that say about God? Look, that tells you about the kindness of God. God didn't tell his slaves, "Look, go out and find the best of the best. We're looking for the best people." God didn't say that. God's invitation to his great wedding feast for his son was open to everybody. And he knew ahead of time you're going to get a mix of both good and bad people. But everybody that's invited can prepare for this wedding. And I think that's true for all of us. When they're getting invited to the wedding, there were some things that were expected. All right? And I think there are things that are expected of us. You got to RSVP. I know we have some problems with that here in our congregation. Thank Kelly for that. We had young kids over to the house the other night, maybe a couple weeks ago, and I asked Anna, "Do you know how many people are coming?" She's like, "No idea. No clue. All right, we're just going to get a bunch of pizzas. If we're out, we'll go get some more. Look, RSVPs are invitation. You want to let God know, I plan on attending. God, I respond to your invitation. That's part and parcel with getting invited somewhere. They want to know. And look, when God calls out his invitation, he wants to hear people respond. He don't want you waiting, or, oh, maybe we'll go. I don't know what we're going to do. We'll see about it. Now, those are the first people that went about their business. You want somebody that's willing to come. Secondly, well, you need somebody that's going to be ready. You know, as you're going to go to the wedding, and we'll talk more about this on the next slide, you got to get prepared. All right, if you know you're going to a wedding, you're not thinking, all right, look, we're going to go to the beach, and then we're going to leave straight from the beach, go straight to the wedding, and head back to the beach. I'm thinking sandals, thinking tank top. You think that'll be a problem? Well, yeah, it'll be a problem. Who wants you in their pictures at the wedding? Nobody wants to see you near them. No, that's a problem. You got to get dressed up. Everybody's expecting things to be nice. They've been planning for it for a while. You got to make sure you're going to fit in. God has expectations for that too, which we'll talk about. And along those same lines, a lot of times people bring a gift, wedding gift. It's customary, right, that we'll bring some sort of offering and prepare. But we know this. Okay, it's not like there are no expectations for the wedding. And I'm going to tell you that God has expectations for his invitation too. Even though everyone's invited, God doesn't say just, you know, whatever. Just act however you want, come how you are, whoever you are. That's not how God does things. And we know that by reading the next few verses. Read along with me. But when the king came in, verse 11, to look over the dinner guests, he saw a man there who was not dressed in wedding clothes. He said to him, friend, don't you come in here without wedding clothes? And the man was speechless. Then the king said to his servants, bind him hand and foot, and throw him into the outer darkness. In that place, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen. Isn't that last verse scary to death? That's what I wanted to name the lesson, but it was too scary. I want to talk about something nice and light. At first it's wedding, but then here you're talking about eternal damnation. But that's what's at stake. Many people are called, but few are chosen. Here the king comes in, and he's excited that his guests are here. And yet, what occurs? Well, his eye is drawn to somebody that seems to, in some way, be spurning this particular invitation. Well, clicked a couple times. Sorry, Dion, it was acting weird. You think about what's occurring here. It's a little strange. But back in the olden times, when you were having a formal event like this, you might provide wedding garments for people. All right, you might give them something to wear. God didn't go out and invite all these people. The king invited everybody to come in. And then he's disappointed that some poor person doesn't have clothes to put on. You know, at first glance, when you read the story, you're like, well, that's strange. I mean, you go out and invite a homeless person. Why are you surprised they show up and they look like that? Well, that's not how things went. Wedding garments were provided. The king doesn't come in and he scratches his head like, well, who are you? Why are you here? No, he knows why they're there. And the king has made sure everything was ready for the great occasion. This person just didn't have enough interest to put them on. Here, the wedding garment may have been provided to them, but they said, you know, I really would like to be here, but I don't really want to do anything too different. I'm not going to change my life too much. And I think that's how a lot of people are. Look, the king comes in. It's not that this person was antagonistic about the invite. He didn't get mad. It wasn't even that he said he's apathetic. He's like, that sounds good. You're selling eternal life? I'm in. But yet, he's in on his own conditions. You see, he doesn't want to conform to the situation or conform to the expectation of the king. Now, what does that say about a person who shows up to your wedding in their tank top and their flip-flops? What does that tell you? Well, that tells you they care a lot more about themselves than whatever you might think about them. And that's the culture we live in today, isn't it? I mean, people are just very casual, and they want people walk around preaching with no ties on. I mean, you think this place is falling apart. And that's how people are. They're like, well, I'm offended that you would even expect me to dress up. You know, we should just do things how we are. Brethren, that's not how things ought to be. There's some expectations that God has for you in your entrance to the kingdom of heaven. Remember, that's what this story's about. This story's about not, oh, you need to look nice. This story's not about, oh, you need to fit in and dress like everybody else. That's not it. The story is God has given you everything you need to prepare, and this person didn't care enough to put on the thing that God gave them. Even though they accepted this invitation, they still ultimately were an offense to God. Notice when the king addresses him, the king says, "Friend, why don't you have your garment on?" It says the man was without excuse. He didn't say anything. He was speechless. He didn't say, "Well, God, you never had me one," or, "God, I didn't know. You didn't set the expectations." Look, if there were excuses to be given, this is the time you would have given them. "Lord, I'm homeless. I can't afford it. Lord, I can't live up to your expectations." Everything God expected, he had been given. And yet this man, he could say nothing to it, because really there was nothing to say. It was on his own and his own laziness, his own attitude, his own failure to respond to God. And so Jesus ultimately here leaves us with this verse 14 where he says, look, many people are going to be called, but few are still going to be chosen. Now I got one last slide I want to hit from an application standpoint, but I want you to think about what this means to you. I mean, this means to you and I that everybody in this room has responded to the great invitation of God on some level, right? Somebody said, "Well, Sunday morning, probably should find ourselves in the presence of God." But you know that's not enough. It's not enough just to come when God calls you to His presence. That you've got to be dressed appropriately in response to God. That God's got to see you when He comes in and see something that pleases Him. The great takeaway for us is just because you've been called doesn't mean you're still ultimately going to be chosen. Well, what a warning for us. There are three things I want to leave you with as we think about our application this morning. Number one, look, the guests may not care what you look like, but the host will. Now, as you think about the church, it really is this way. You know, there are people here, and you can have a bunch of people, and like Brother Pink says, they want to build a building, they want to have more. You know what? We're happy to have people here, but at the end of the day, I'm not the one you got to please. I may be glad you're here, and you may look just fine to me. You may look better than fine. I may think this is the ideal Christian. But that's not what we need to do. That's not who we need to please. You can't fool God, even though you can fool me. And when that day comes where the king comes in and he's ready for all his guests and he's going to mingle with you and he's going to see you and the king comes to shake your hand, he's going to look you up and down and say, "Steve, what are you wearing? What do you got on? You're not ready for this. Get out." What a difficult thing, but I think we need to recognize that we might be comfortable in our approach to religion, and we might be comfortable in our church, but are we really ready for that level of scrutiny when God comes home to see His people? The guests may not care what I look like, but the host is going to care. Secondly, everything we need to do to please God has been provided to us. Now let me say it this way, and I want to talk about this for just a couple minutes. You think about what this wedding garment represents. All right, this wedding garment does not represent your moral perfection. Okay, it doesn't and it can't. God isn't calling people to come to Him that have just managed to live their lives in such a perfect way that He can look at them and say, "Well, you're faultless." No, no, no. You know what God does for us? God calls the best of us and the worst of us. God calls the sinners to Him. And you know what He says I want you to do? "Here, I got something for you. I want you to put on Christ. I want you to wear Him like a robe. And you cover yourself in Jesus Christ. And you cover yourself with His righteousness. And when God looks at you, you're prepared." Now, when you look at that situation, there is a man that was comfortable just how he was. God had come and given him the death of His Son to cover any transgression on that man's body. And yet, instead of being white as snow, he was comfortable in his sins. He didn't want to put on Christ. Now, for the Jews, this meant one thing. As he said at the end of Romans 9, look, they had stumbled over the stumbling block. How? Because they pursued salvation as if it were by works. They themselves never arrived at salvation by faith because they felt good with how they were living. They felt good with who they were. Instead of dressing themselves and clothing themselves in humility and Jesus Christ, they clothed themselves with their own personal morality. And in doing that, they missed it all. Look, when God comes to us with Jesus, He becomes our wisdom and our righteousness, our sanctification and our justification. And I'm going to do everything I can to clothe myself with Christ. And to do that, well, it's very easy. You can see in Galatians chapter 3 that He says, "For as many of you as were baptized into Christ have put on Christ." And so when this man comes in, look, I want to be found not in anything, not in the righteousness that comes by the law, but in the righteousness that comes through faith in Jesus Christ. And that's something that you and I can put on. We put our trust in God and our humility, and we live our life 100% for God. And Jesus is going to cleanse us from our unrighteousness. So I don't want anybody to leave here today and think, well, God's not going to accept me, and that's miserable. He's not going to call me. Everybody God calls can be saved. And everything you need to please God has been provided to you. But third and finally this morning, I can't help but make this point and leave you with this. Harsh crimes deserve harsh punishment. If there's a weird thing about the story, it is this to me. That you see the king come in and the guy's not dressed, and he tells him, "I want you to bind this man and cast him into outer darkness where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth." I mean, that's just a little extreme, isn't it? But yet, when you see what has occurred in real life, you really know. Let's think of it this way. Let's say it's your wedding, and you've invited everybody, and you put on the little invitation, formal attire, please. And someone comes in, and they say, "You know, we better go. There might be some food." And they're there in their tank top and their flip-flops. Would it be inappropriate for you to say, "We need you to leave"? Of course it's not. It's not inappropriate at all. If you've set the expectations, you provided people what they needed, and people could care less, and they're going to come just because they want to be there, or maybe whatever. No, it's 100% appropriate. Restaurants do that. Look, shirts and shoes required. Okay, there's a sign here. And if you don't meet their expectations, they're going to kick you out. Look, that's the same thing with God's kingdom. When God says the kingdom of heaven is like this, if you're unprepared and unclothed, God's going to kick you out of His kingdom. And He's going to cast you, which is the only place outside of His kingdom, which is 100% separation from Him. Fully and finally and eternally. And in that place, there's no middle ground where it's kind of nice and it's kind of bad. There's just weeping and gnashing of teeth. What that means is, there's just people that are living in pain and regret. I don't want you to do that. But if you've trampled underfoot the Son of God, and consider the blood by which you've been sanctified a common thing, then instead of getting stoned like they did in Moses' day, don't you think you deserve a worse punishment? He said in Hebrews chapter 10. I think that's true. If God did everything to prepare, to the point where instead of it being an oxen or a lamb that was sacrificed, but He killed His own Son for you, what do you think you deserve if you reject that sacrifice? But the best thing is, while you're still here and you got ears, the invitation's open to all. You can come in right now and clothe yourself with Christ through your repentance, your belief, and your baptism. You can turn your life over to God now and be clothed in such a way that God will welcome you into His kingdom. And look, it's going to be a party you don't want to miss. I invite you all, not through me, but through God. Make your life right with Him today as we stand and sing a song to encourage you.
Healing happy, full and free, brought me lower while I whispered, less of self and more of thee, less of self and more of thee, less of self. Has conquered none of self and all of thee, none of self and all of thee, none of self and all of thee, Lord, thy love has conquered none of self.
Good morning. It's good to be here this morning. It's good to see each of you here. If you're visiting with us, we're especially glad you're with us and hope you're able to come back every chance you get. We'll meet again this evening at 5 o'clock and again on Wednesday at 7:30. Just a few announcements before we're dismissed by Brother Bobby. We have a few that are sick. Leon Layton has a problem with his knee, so he's at home today. Cherish Robinson is sick. And Donnie Gilbert has been having a rough time. He's had the flu and now might have pneumonia, so we need to remember him in our prayers. I don't have an update on Jeff Dinsmore's uncle, but last I heard they had called in hospice, so we need to be praying for that family and for Jeff. Out of town, the Grinnells are, I believe, still traveling, unless they're here. I think for Nicole's grandmother's funeral. And Todd is preaching at Claremont this morning. A few other announcements. This evening, following evening service, the visitor follow-up group will be meeting in the back. So see Bobby Thornton if you are interested in that and would like to participate. If you don't have a current picture for the directory, you need to get one. This morning after worship's over, meet in the back here. I believe Debbie Huff will be taking the pictures. We're also going to be having a printed directory soon, so if you don't want a stock clip art image for your picture, then make sure and see Debbie. Stephen already mentioned it, but the service next Sunday will be geared towards visitors, so remember to be inviting those friends. Group 4 will be meeting at the Eastie's house following morning worship this morning, and group 6 will be meeting this coming Saturday at 5 p.m. at the Cecil and Deborah Douthat's home. Today is the last day to help with the portable defibrillators, so see Aaron Harward if you'd like to help in the purchase of those. Also, a change of the side doors, those will be locked, and also the back door, I believe. Those will have a code on them if they don't already. And don't forget, next Sunday, the time changes at 2 a.m. So set your clock forward next Sunday. Now, Brother Bobby will lead us.